All right. Tonight, the only person I'm going to let read two poems tonight is, or only two pages, though, is Lucille, because last week we kind of screwed her up with this microphone. And for my begging for my forgiveness, please come on.
As long as it's not in my face. Early morning, February 1949. I heard my mother say to my dad, "I'll let her sleep." I was wide awake. Suddenly, from out of the blue, the thought came, hospital, operation. I lay in bed, my mind racing. I would leave. I could slip out my bedroom window onto the porch roof and drop to the ground, run to Thelma's house and plead with her to hide me. Or I could keep running to some place where nobody knew me. Before I left for the hospital, my mother told me a doctor would put me to sleep with gas. "Don't fight it," she said. "Breathe deep and it will be easier." I knew the operation wouldn't work. I went with my dad on the train. I didn't talk, not on the train, not at the hospital. The second poem, rooming with seven-year-olds. My fourth hospital stay was only 5 days long. I was rooming with seven-year-olds, waiting to have their eyes uncrossed. I lay in bed, planning my getaway. I would climb out the window in my pajamas, walk carefully along the ledge. Something always interrupted. This time it was the new girl, crying for her parents to not leave her. When her parents left, I told her, "Maybe you won't have an operation at all. Maybe a man will climb in the sixth-story window and kidnap us both." I borrowed a radio from somewhere, raided the kitchen, drew the curtains around my bed, and fell asleep reading Nancy Drew. After breakfast, I asked the nurse, and they moved me across the hall with Anne and Alice.
Thank you, Lucille. Much better than that fiasco we had last week. Oh, this is tough right here. This is in Braille or something. Could you tell me what this is? My eyes are that bad.
That's Kayla's. How much is it?
Good week to come home.
Yes.
So I'm reading this a poem that I got from Jan. We were in a cab in Chicago, which is what we do a lot when she's in Chicago. And I don't know where we were going, but she looked at me and she was like, "Hellwave, write it down." And I did because I'm a good student. I'm a good life student. And so I went home and, like a good life student, I wrote it. Hellwave, 8 tattoos and can't stop, want my body covered, no space for that night at the fraternity house, body pulled open, cracked like glass, needle in my skin, the queen wasp, thick and pissed off, friends say, girl, you're on the fringe, father likes to get me drunk, show off, this is my smart daughter, the pretty one's at home, I know the push of a hand on the back of the head, face full of cock, baby, no teeth, do what I tell you to do, stepfather's raised fist, bitch, I'll hit you. I'm 19 years old in Pittsburgh dive bars. I know men with beer breath. For a tit grab, it's all you can drink all night. I'll suck you off for a joint. Want to be on fire. I'm looking for my studded Sid Vicious cliche. A man with the electric guitar, Harley, to get me the fuck out of here. Ride the hell wave screaming to the punk rock core. Tying me to what I can't get away from. The fire of the working class J&L Mills. Rubbing another stranger. Tapping my true tattooed poet family of leather jackets, raw with my own blood, sweat, dirt. Thank you.
Got me, Kayla. I don't know. I think that's right now. Kayla, you do all that for a joint. What the hell would you do for a nickel bag? My. We'll find out later. All right, Joey. I'm too old, Kayla, forget it. Joe Calden. Where are you at, Joey? Joey, come on.
Okay. Tough acts to follow, but let's try. I'm going to dedicate this to Heinz Ward. Field sobriety test. After a night spent at the bar, drive home carefully in your car. Only two drinks, you're feeling fine. Don't drift across that yellow line. At precisely this time of night, the uniformed law wields its might. It's always alarming to see flashing lights at 2:45. Step outside, count from 1 to 5. Count it backward. Will you arrive? Now, go touch the tip of your nose, then walk the line, steady on your toes. The lawman returns your owner's card, assured you won't swerve into a yard. Smile, wave, leave this zone. The life that's saved may be your own. Thank you.
This is a Japanese literary form. I've read some before recently, but this is a form called haibun. It's spelled H-A-I-B-U-N, also known as haiku prose. And I have written, I have read examples of this form here before. It's a prose poem that ends with a haiku. And in some cases, there are other haiku interspersed within the prose poem, as in this case, a total of 3 haiku. The title, Mizuko, is a Japanese word. The rest of the title translates it, Water Children. Mizuko, Water Children, at a temple in Japan. Dressed as though for a birthday, squat stone statues repeat the image of Jizo, patron god of children. Row after row, like dolls in a toy shop, memorial figurines rest on ascending steps. Knitted caps, blue or pink or purple, coddle bald heads. Capes, red and white, encircle small shoulders. Bibs in nursery patterns protect round chests. Gray faces, bright clothes, talismans of death too soon, lost sons, lost daughters. High in the back row sit the smallest, their caps the size of glove fingers, their scarlet bibs merely collars. Rough hewn, these statuettes recall children never born. Mizuko, their lives brief as water. Through misfortune or someone's choice, the world had no room for them. Time's turning wheel granted no rebirth. Dark stones in shadow, water children wiped away before spring greening. Mourners, temple pilgrims, or attendant priests drape even these stones in blessing. When dust dowels a cap or apron, someone renews the wardrobe. Offerings of food and sake appear on every step, and poppies, red, white, yellow, rise tall in granite urns. Someone burns incense every year on the day each child, however small, departed. Children's guardian, Jizo after Jizo, wears colors of old grief. Thank you.
Hello. Hey. No, this is good. This is good. This is very good. I'm Claire Matway, and this is a spoken word piece that I wrote in April. April. Yeah. And it does not have a name. You are a window, and after the trees grow their feathers and the day becomes a tangle of arms, you will be broken. But the uncertainties that you carry like seashells will still be here, traced across your body like the trembling reflections of water that trace the underbellies of boats. I am still here. I am holding on. I am learning about my own inability to carry shadows or bear the weight of the thousand spinning bicycle wheels all around my eyes. And this is the same storm warning. Rain over rain over rain. The same steam rises from the ground, and we are shouldering the same soft feeling because my sister's arms smell like the end of a story. Because on New Year's Day, my whole family stayed up late to do the dishes, and we sang the house louder than the sinks and the city, and in this way, everything begins to feel temporary. Bowls, wine glasses, soap bubbles. And I wish it were simpler than this. I wish that my arm muscles would contract and release the way I want them to, but while the trees are growing their feathers, we are all only water. We are resketching our faces over and over with different eyes. We are dipping our shoulder blades and rib cages with blue, excuse me, in blue, orange, purple, green, in colors to turn them new. We are frightening. Because our hair is made of fire and flowers. But look, this is the same storm warning, breath over breath over breath. But look, it is daybreak, it is sky between lives, it is horizon blooming, and it is trees learning how to grow feathers, and it is us. We are mourning, and we are mourning, and I am mourning. And you are a window. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for staying, and I just wanted to say this is a wonderful fusion of students and teachers, and that was Stacy's student, and she's really great. And my teachers are all here too, Stacy and Jan and Judith, and Ed through Judith. And so I thought I would read a poem that I wrote for Stacy Waite, because as my teacher, she said I couldn't put the words cute and phallus together in a poem. This is called Dead Girl Band for Stacy Waite. Male or female, one can be a prick. With this in mind, the human body is constructed like a walking phallus of water. This is cute in the same foolish way that a circus clown is cute. And here, just now, the muses sit erect in their coffins. Emily Dickinson, Emily Bronte, Edna St. Vincent Millay, like a dead girl band, like a chorus of clowns, with one voice they cheer, write what we could not, write about the cuteness of the phallus. Please, for our sake. Their ringing starts deep in my middle ear. I grab a Q-tip, phallus, with two cute cotton balls at the ends. I remember back to those days with bisexual Christopher, sunbathing nude on the rooftops, omelets and cactus leaves, his cock that bent the opposite way, downwards, erect, small, crooked, cute, uncircumcised head. Thank you.
Now. Yeah, you can't tell because it's on the paper. Okay. I can't get out of the car. I've been crying, and I look at two. I want to yell at her. Cancerous cells don't mean anything. Wait till we've seen the doctor to start talking about death. I need her to be hopeful so I can stop crying. Go to class, bring my grades up, and prove her wrong, just in case. Benjamin has his future set, but I'm unfinished, or so you say, and so you're not ready to die.
Lauren Wolf, come on up there.
I have to unfold my poem anyway. So my graduate teacher used to say, why do you fold your poems? Because I have to fit them in my pocket, right? So this is a brand new poem that I wrote on Father's Day, which is kind of ironic considering the topic. It's called The Dark Source. I can't really see it. All right. In the middle school lunch line, a girl in front of me leans in and asks, are you half and half? The adult in me wants to answer, yes, I am a double helix, a matrix of girl and woman who feels the sting of loving and not loving. But the child in me just hangs her head and says, no. Are you sure, she asks, what color is your father? I don't know my father, I say. Oh, you don't know your father, she says? Then you might be half and half. She's right. I might be half black or any of the other half things I've been mistaken for over the years. Native American, Indian, Puerto Rican, Mexican, Grecian, South American, Middle Eastern, Italian, Nepali. No, and no. I am white, the void of color. I am the unknown. After school, I cried to my mom, "Am I half black?" It wasn't the color I cried over. It didn't matter one way or another. It was the uncertainty, the ache of not knowing, the finite truth of a father, no matter the tone. I wanted the unabridged version of me. I got bits and pieces, but fragments of a father do not make a dad. I wanted the texture, the ebb and flow of his hue, the way we memorize parts of our parents' skin, the age spots growing up my mom's arm, wrinkles wound around her eyelids and knuckle bones, the tenderness of her touch when I fold into her chest, heartbroken and alone. I cannot know what his skin holds, because it never held me. My father is a myth, not the Herculean Alexander the Great, but the Attila the Hun Caligula myth, the kind of man that breaks a woman down, strips her of certainty, leaves her crying because she can't say for sure that she knows anything. I've become that woman, dark brown eyes and hair, olive skin doesn't look like the rest of her family, woman. Father, are you where all my darkness comes from, the rampant rage, desire to hit and break things? Did you breed me to be like you, unlovable? The men I've tried to hold forever, the white men, the Asian, the black men, those that look for a minute but always turn away? Or did you breed me to run, like you, from my mother, from my reflection, from the phone call away that you are? Why haven't you come to me? If you look me in the eye and tell me you fucked up, I'll forgive you. Tell me when you gave my little sister my name, you weren't trying to replace me. Be a man. Come to me. I'm a woman. I can take it. After all, women have been riding the back of no forever. No, you can't work like a man. No, you can't vote, go to college. You can't decide when to use your own womb. No, you can't love who you want to love. I've heard it before. I won't break, crumble like a sandcastle in the tide. I'll make it past your mistake, your confession. Just admit it. Look me in the eye and tell me like a real man, you never loved me. You never loved yourself. And I'll check you off like I check the little empty box that says other.
Kate, I invite you up to introduce this next poet, but it looks like it's Paul. Paul, get on up there. Paul.
Two pages or one poem, I always wondered if punctuation was a variable. Got eight lines for you. Break it down into a title, epigraph, and a poem. Bucket list. Volume found percentage. Math was healing. Skill and organization. Shelve their claws. Disenfranchised muscle gave notice to annual mud on the bike, a fit death. Tumbleweed sardine. I love traveling grad students. Confident that fossil was organic. Hoard fruit till it's unwanted. recognizable. To be or not published, write better. A candle in the strophe blew it for me.
We had a poem about a mother-daughter relationship. My daughter isn't here with me, so I don't have to ask her to leave the room. This is a father-daughter relationship poem. Sparrow. Again, a storm is howling against these canyon walls. How disappointing to fly alone. No one can say how far down or how far up. Maps provide only longitude and latitude, not certitude. Walls of stone open deep wounds. The search starts in a terrain that blocks out the sun. Yet stones on these mountains store indelible tales. On a precipice, fear takes root, weeds grow wild. Brush too takes root in rock and ground, takes root and grows wild, articulate berries that nourish and heal. The sky embraces these mountains. You hear echoes and ridicule, mile markers, opinions, dictates. It is a sky that offers hope. You've been introduced, yes, yes. Speak to the rain and the clouds. They answer. Listen to the water as it rains through stone. You will find your way, marking new boundaries. Tales of fathers and children resonate in these mountains. Much of the mountains about you. You are strong in the open air. Breathe deeply of mountains. Count aloud, one peak, two peaks, peaks assembling. It's a good exercise. I can talk about my flight and express my fears. Feathers are fragile. No one can say how far down or how far up as you propel your flight. Not even a father who imagines each and each daylight. Thank you.
With the grace of technology, I've pulled my poem up on Facebook. Thank you, Mark Zuckerberg. All right. This is called Wayward Highways, and I wrote it in April too, dude. So.
Right on. April's
it's a good month to write. All right. Driving you madly into your forbidden highways, heading wayward. Broken radio consciousness unheard as you come closer before you move faster to the muses you never disarmed. Here they are presented before you. Here they are, no longer whisked away by your windshield wiper iris. Here they are shackled to your mesmerizing muffler smog. Your low beam no longer a finger to your fender bender lips. Your high brow is now too low for you to safely pass under. Your ride has been a speed trap, and they have climbed your tail, marched the steps of your spine, and now stand with their feet stabbed in your scalp. They bellow in thrilling voices. Now inspire us. Thank you.
Amen. Amen. Okay. So, yeah, this is a poem I wrote, like, 3 days ago. In class with Stacy Wade. Hold on. Alright, I laid in your bed and watched the seafoam glowing green clock numbers float away our time. They sailed out to sea like forgotten beach umbrellas at high tide, or the best seashells we never find, because of early riser tourists. I asked you how you could sleep soundly away the minutes, oblivious to the moonlights and midnights, knowing what you knew. How you could keep that knowledge with a smile and a laugh, how you could believe that it'd all be okay, how you never worried the day away, because I worried away every day since the day I asked you, darling, what's your passion? And you laughed and said, honey, I haven't got one. I thought you were kidding, but that hope was as much a joke as you took the question, your face, angular plane, set in lines of contentment. You told me, no worries, dear, I'll find my passion in college or afterward, in experiences and somewhere new. And I had to ask, how you could step forward onto cobblestone one in your road without the comfort of knowing that what you were walking toward was something you'd love. And you said, honey, that's life. The lucky find what they love. The rest of us, we just do.
You should know I did not write this poem. A woman named Diane Elaine Dees wrote this poem. But I feel moved to read it because it's an anti-war poem. Flat Daddy watches CNN. The first year, Flat Daddy played it safe, went to church, attended soccer games, sat silently in the big chair on Christmas morning while everyone read cards and cried. He saw American Idol and Desperate Housewives and kept his thoughts to himself. But Flat Daddy got worn out, worn down, his guard uniform stained from tears and peanut butter, the crease in his face growing deeper with every passing month. Flat Daddy became bored, turned on the TV, and heard talking heads prattle about troop surge, slow bleed, car bombs, Baghdad battle. His flat head ached, his digital smile folded. Someday, if real Daddy ever comes home, he will pose with Flat Daddy before Flat Daddy goes to the attic to live among the broken bodies of old dolls and teddy bears. His job done, no one will care what becomes of him, whether he is buried under debris or disappears in a slow burn.
Did I miss anybody? I'm gonna close it up with a poem and so I can show off in front of Judy and Ed and Jan a little bit. I'm actually going to cut the first part off and it'll come to slightly less than 2 pages. My name was Dog Undercover. That was my nickname. Okay, so. And just real quick, we would go into character. And sometimes I would play like, you know, you'd be a pimp or whatever. Sometimes I'd play the stuttering retard. And I would actually, not buy heroin, you know, that way. Anyway. So I taught Tommy how to be the stuttering retard. Me and Tommy Terrific met with two crack whores. I'm picking up in the middle. I'm not reading the first one. Me and Tommy Terrific met two crack whores, Tabby and Tina. Tabby was high, yellow, skinny, and dirty. Might even say crusty, with track marks and sores from her asshole to her elbow. Tina, I think, was a white girl, but you couldn't really tell because she had painted her body with red dye. I think the giver of fake tan. Both ladies wore short, fake leather red skirts with chubby cheeks hanging and silk panty pussies showing. I liked them, and they both smelled like they had bathed in sin. Worn, torn fishnets, nylons with 6-inch wooden Dutch clogs. My guess is so a trick could hear them coming or a quick slip out of the wooden slippers to run from pervs or police. the two whores wronged us, ripped us off of our money, and didn't bring back the rock. We caught them working the streets. I said, baby, you took our money and no package. Tina said, we came back with, but you was a ghost, so we figured you'd want us to smoke the feel good. I said, Tina, you lying bitch. I want the rock or the jing-a-ling. You know the rules. Tappy said, honest to God, I swear to Jesus, we was back with the rock, but yous was gone. I said, Tappy, the devil's dancing on your tongue. Rock or jing-a-ling, or I'm going to have to shoot yous, or at least cut off your nipples. You see, I ain't mad. My retarded brother is. Tommy started to pound his fist in his chest and acting like a sore-ass baboon. How about if we give your retarded brother some pussy? I said, now you're talking, that'll work. Pussy instead of rock, why not? Tom McTerrific started to pound his chest and yelling, no, no pussy! No pussy! I said, Tommy, but the pussy won't tie your tongue and make your toes curl. Tommy Terrific started to pound his chest harder and ran in a circle. No pussy! I looked at Tina and Tabby. You don't want no pussy. But I'll tell you, it was the thought that counts. You each owe me one fur burger, and cause you your offer was sincere, you can both keep your nipples. Tina and Tabby said, word, dog. We'll make it right, and you got a hair pie promise. I said, word up. Show the retard your tits, and it's a bet. Tina pulled out her tits, which looked like the ears of a basset hound. And Tommy started to bark, and Tabby pulled out one tit, squeezed it, and it squirted milk. She said, I just had a kid, and I'm breastfeeding the rump. I said, squirt some titty milk on Tommy. She turned her titty towards Tommy, and Tommy Terrific ran the car screaming, No! And he slammed and locked the door. I said, wow, look at him go. You'd have thought you set Tommy on fire. See your girls at the watering hole. They said, bye, dog. I said, bye, dog. See you later. Next week. Come have some fun with us next week.